this thing is finally breaking. I've made literally hundreds and hundreds of recordings on this thing. Okay, good. So, again, as you know, we're going through these tougher questions that are not necessarily dealt with directly in the Bible, but these are practical questions that I think all Christians think about. They're important. Now, I was going to skip a week and just do a sort of a Bible lesson, but what we're going to do tonight is Christianity and military service. And I thought that probably this is more of a guy thing. Now, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just doing a gender thing and making a big thing out of nothing. But I do think this is mainly an issue for men in terms of the things we're going to talk about. Should I serve? Should I defend my home with a gun? These kinds of things. Okay, got it? So that's what we're going to do. And I think it'll be interesting. So let's get to it. Ooh, I got to go through a lot of slides here. Whew. All right. Yep, almost there. Okay, good. So let's get started. Questions to think about. And again, these may not directly impact you, but you definitely will know people for whom this is a big question. Is it okay for a Christian to be in the military, especially in a voluntary situation, which we would have here in the United States, in a position where, theoretically, your job is to kill people? That is, at least in theory, the job of somebody in the military, which is, I'm gonna make a distinction between, say, being in the police force and being in the military. So the military is designed essentially to kill people or possibly prevent people from being killed primarily by killing them. All right? So is it acceptable? And there, by the way, there are definitely arguments in favor of this. The answer yes is certainly a possible answer. I want to tell you that right now. All right? In a position where he or she may be required to take the life of a morally innocent person from the other side in a military conflict. What I'm assuming here is moral neutrality in warfare. In other words, your enemy is no more or less good or bad. You're simply taking their life as part of that job. Okay, what about, let's give some specific situations. What about if you were Ukrainian and your country was being occupied, was being invaded and taken over in an unjust way by the Russian military? Would that change the calculus? Or what if you were a Russian citizen? All right, and your country, although you probably don't see it this way, is invading another sovereign country in order to take it over. All right, would that change the calculus? Or here's a good one. What if you lived in Ohio in the year 1862? Or what if you lived in Alabama in the year 1862? All right, where basically taking up arms against people from your own country in a civil war. Is that something a Christian could and should do? All right. Now, doesn't the Bible say something like this? The authorities that exist have been established by God. Wouldn't that sort of, in some sense, almost automatically authorize the moral possibility of doing such a thing? Possibly. What if we live in a country that has compulsory military service, which we, the people in this room do not? Would that change the answer to the question? Okay? So, remember, we have three levels of questions. Oh yeah. What about the just war theory? That's the thing. So, Christians for centuries have tried to defend the idea of a certain kind of war being a just war, which would be one that Christians could take part in, as opposed to a theoretically unjust war. And is there such a thing as a just war? Does that theory have any validity at all? All right? So, remember, in all of these questions, we're first asking, what does the Bible definitely speak to? And the answer is, in this range of questions, not much. But I believe there's at least one conclusion we can reach unequivocally in this. So we'll talk about that. Remember, that's the first level. The second level is, what can we reasonably infer or conclude from Scripture, from biblical principles? All right? In fact, in the case of abortion, we notice that technically it's not even mentioned in the Bible. And yet we could very strongly infer from the biblical statements about the dignity of human life, we could reach a very strong conclusion, even where the Bible maybe does not make definite statements. So are we going to have things like that in this set of questions? Remember those questions. Are any of these questions in level one, where the Bible speaks to it? Are any of these questions in level two, where you could reach a conclusion that most any reasonable interpreter of the Bible would come to? Or is it level three, which are gray areas where people are just going to have their own conviction and allow for other believers, even within their own individual local church, to have a different thought on? Okay, got it? So those are our discussions. Now, of course, we're going to start with Jesus, right? I know we have a small group here. So I need some enthusiasm. Come on, I need some enthusiasm. I've got to put out some energy, and if I don't get any enthusiasm, it's going to be hard for me to have energy. All right, thank you. Matthew 5, 43 and 44. I'm just going to put it out there. Jesus was a pacifist. Okay? Now, we'll talk about, you know, how do we interpret that, but Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 and 44. Remember some of those questions. Can a Christian legitimately go out and start killing people from another group that they're at war with? Matthew 5, 43 and 44, where Jesus said, "You've heard that it's said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy." By the way, the Bible never said hate your enemy, okay? It did say love your neighbor, but the Bible never said hate your enemy. So it's kind of funny that, because it had been said, people said, oh, it's not the Bible, just so you know. Although the Bible did say, kill your enemy, in certain cases, we'll talk about that. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those that persecute you. All right, so if you're firing a gun at somebody and killing them, that doesn't seem to fall within the range of loving them. Okay? Love your neighbor and hate your enemy? No. I say love your enemy, pray for them. Don't shoot bullets at them. By the way, the former, love your neighbor, is a quote from Leviticus 19:18. The latter definitely is not. So it raises the question, how can one kill a person that one loves, even in warfare? It begs the question. I'm not saying just because I asked that question, it's automatically an easily answered question. Okay, Matthew 5, verse 39. Jesus goes on. Actually, I'm going back, aren't I? But verse 38. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants you to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. So we see this principle of non-resistance. We can see where Martin Luther King came up with this philosophy of Christian protest and Christian resistance. So this passage, however, is about defending yourself. So although Jesus said, if somebody's going after you, give them the other cheek, right? He's not talking about what if they go after your neighbor, all right? So I don't want to make this too simple or imply that it's simpler than it actually is. Okay, Matthew 26, verse 52, where it's interesting because Jesus told Peter to bring a sword, but the reason he told him to bring a sword was so he could tell him, don't use a sword, right? That was kind of interesting, where Jesus said, all those who basically said to Peter, put your sword back in its place. For all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Okay? Now, we sponsored a debate. I think I might have mentioned this to you all before. It was in Elmhurst University in Chicago. It was a debate between a Muslim guy, Shabir Ali, the most famous apologist in Islam even today, Shmuley Boteach, who at that point anyway was the most famous rabbi in the U.S., and our friend Douglas Jacoby on the premise, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, which is the true legacy of Abraham. And one of their criticisms, both Shabir Ali and Shmuley Boteach said Jesus is not the legacy of Abraham because Jesus was a pacifist and Abraham was not. That was one of their arguments. Okay? Jesus is someone who refused to use violence in any form whatsoever in order to defend himself, or even presumably to defend anybody. Jesus fits the classic definition of a pacifist, a person who would go to jail rather than pick up a gun. Okay? That's what a pacifist is. Got it?
Yeah.
All right? And pacifism is a very common movement within Christianity, but certainly not universal, far from it. You're going to have trouble getting a Quaker to pick up a gun, that's for sure, okay, etc. All right? So, to me, that's interesting, and I think they had a good point. In order for a Christian to say, yes, Jesus represents the legacy of Abraham, you're going to have to explain why Abraham was able to, not really his son Lot, but whatever, his nephew Lot, it was able to take part in, essentially, in warfare. Okay? But I think, I would have this tentative conclusion. My tentative conclusion is every reasonable Bible reader will agree that Jesus was a pacifist. He said in John 18, verse 38, "My kingdom is not of this world." And therefore, he says, "I am not going to defend myself." In the context he's talking about, when he said, "My kingdom is not of this world," that's why I'm not going to defend myself. So my conclusion is, Jesus was a pacifist who would not encourage his followers to engage in armed conflict in a supposedly moral, just war. Okay? That's what I would conclude. Now, that's not the final statement, but I'm going to say that for now. Okay, you have to think about whether you agree with that. Objection, some would say, well, even Jesus used military illustrations. I mean, if he didn't believe in the military, then why did he use examples like, suppose a general is going to go to war against another general? Would he not, if he had 10,000 soldiers going against 20,000, would he not sue for terms of peace? So even Jesus used warfare in his illustrations, so that proves he had nothing against warfare. Believe me, people use that argument. And I'll tell you right now, that's a bogus argument. Because Jesus also said, "I'm going to come like a thief in the night."
Yeah.
So is he saying thievery is good? I mean, the fact that he uses an illustration from a commonly understood thing is not evidence in any way whatsoever that Jesus is saying, "Sure, let's do that." All right? So I'm going to stick with my preliminary conclusion, which is Jesus is a radical pacifist. It's still not completely unreasonable to ask, might Jesus have made an exception, not for himself, no way, but possibly for you or for me. It's not an unreasonable question to ask. Okay, got it? All right, Paul. Now, be careful. I'm reading 2 Corinthians 10, 3 through 4, and I'm taking this one pretty badly out of context, okay? Let's read it, though. All right, be careful. Paul had less references to warfare. And by the way, Paul also used military things as illustrations, all right, in his... He talks about, like a soldier in an army and that kind of stuff, okay? 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3 through 4. It says here, "For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does." Now, let me stop there. Again, context. He's not talking about firing guns at people. Okay? But nevertheless, I believe Paul is stating a biblical principle that we could apply to this question. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not weapons of the world. In the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. I don't believe that Paul directly addressed the question of military service, but he did say, we use spiritual weapons, not physical ones. All right? All right. Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. Okay, great. So now, moving on. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. No. So, we do not defend the kingdom of God using military force. Full stop. In fact, that's going to be my conclusion in category number one. Okay, where's category number one? Yeah, okay. Yes. We'll get to that. I'm going to come back to that because, again, I want to do, remember, category one, category two, category three. All right? But I believe that I've established reasonably, confidently, with no need to even qualify it, that Jesus was a pacifist who did not anticipate his followers voluntarily joining military organizations in order to engage in warfare. All right? So the only conclusion I reach from category number one, things which we can say for sure based on the Bible, is that Christians would not use warfare to spread their belief. Okay? I would say that. We do not defend the kingdom of God using military force. Have Christians ever used military force to defend Christian belief? Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. But I believe that that is a clear-cut violation without any need to qualify it or explain it. That is wrong. It is unchristian. It is ungodly, and we should not do it. All right? So whether or not a Christian can be voluntarily involved in the military is to be decided. But a war for the sake of spreading or even for guarding Christianity, such as the Crusades or the Inquisition, is absolutely ruled out. This is the only clear-cut category one conclusion that I reach. Okay? So we're going to go to category number two pretty quickly. But the Crusades are a sin. They're not a Christian thing. Neither was the Inquisition. And by the way, most people don't realize this, but there were more Crusades against Christians than there were against Muslims. There were a number of Crusades against John Huss, against other groups. In fact, arguably the first crusade was against the group in France. I'm forgetting the name right now. But anyway, question number two, though. All right. What about Christians being involved in the military of a legitimate state? So in other words, military action to defend, to spread, or to guard Christianity ruled out by Jesus because his kingdom is not of this world, period. Question number two, though. Let's say we have a legitimate state. Paul's going to talk about that. And they're engaged in warfare. The question is whether a Christian can say, yes, I want to fight in that war to defend not Christianity, but to defend the state, which is protecting me from outside people trying to attack it. Is that something that a Christian can do? And here I believe we're going to find competing ideas. We're going to find different thoughts. All right? On the one hand, when Jesus interacted with the centurion, and what was the centurion there to do? To be a soldier. He was the soldier in charge of 100 people. He notably said to him, I have not found one with such great faith even in Israel. And he certainly did not tell him to leave his military life. Now, lack of evidence is not evidence of lack. So it's possible, for all we know, he did say, by the way, Mr. Centurion, you need to quit the military or else you can't ever be a Christian. Okay? But we don't have a record of that. In fact, we have a record of Jesus praising him. So I would conclude, at least tentatively, but not absolutely, that Jesus did not necessarily demand soldiers to quit their profession. Okay? On the other hand, the early church was very clear on this. There was no argument. There was no debate. Every Christian author who spoke to the question of military service said the same thing for the first 2.5 centuries. And I've read extensively. I'm pretty sure there are no exceptions. So, for example, we have Clement of Alexandria speaking in around 180 A.D., and we have Tertullian speaking around 200 A.D. Hippolytus also around 200 A.D. Origen around 230 A.D. Lactantius around 280 A.D. There was a unanimous and unambiguous statement by all church fathers that Christians should not join the military. Wow. They were strongly opposed to Christian involvement in the military. That, to me, that might seem to answer the question, but there's two reasons it doesn't. Number one, that's not the Bible. All right. But I would say clearly this is consistent with what the apostles would have taught. But number two, it's possible the situation in Rome was part of the reason they said this. Okay. But the early church was decidedly and without exception pacifist in its orientation. All right. However, they did not demand those already in military service to immediately resign their commission. They did not do that. All right. In fact, they flat out did not demand that. All right. They unanimously opposed them serving in the military. And catechumens who were thinking of joining the military, they said, "We will not baptize you."
Wow.
If you're not going to renounce going into the military, then we will not baptize you. What they would do is say, if you already have committed to that, signed up for that, they didn't demand that they leave, but they told them, but you can't kill anybody. Okay, well, there you go. And you cannot swear military oaths, because military oaths were pagan in nature. So how you could stay in the military without swearing a military oath and without killing somebody, that's an interesting question. All right? So the hierarchy of the church was unanimous. The members of the church were not necessarily on this question. All right, so let me argue from the reverse. A possible argument from the reverse was the Roman military required participation in pagan rites. And possibly that would be the reason that they demanded not being in the military. The problem with that is if you read Origen and Tertullian and Clement, no, they made other arguments beyond that. All right? Now, all of this changed with the Edict of Toleration in 315 A.D., so that by the 5th century, Christians were singing a very different tune. All right? Augustine supported the joining of church and state. Basically, he said, one of the state's jobs is to defend the church. And one of the church's jobs is to essentially defend the state, to rely on the state. And so Augustine is the first one to develop a clear, well-defined concept of a just war for Christians. And he had a list of, you know, you have to have this and this and this and this and this and all that kind of stuff. So he began to develop sort of a Christian concept of a just war. And I tend to want to sort of like, yeah, whatever. But, you know, it's worth at least listening to Augustine, not to simply dismiss him. He argued that in certain cases, there are certain forms of evil that cannot be defeated other than by military force. He argued that to be the case. Okay, does that mean the Christians should be the one joining the army? Well, if you have an empire in which theoretically everybody's a Christian, well, the answer is, well, yeah. But if you have an America where probably less than 3% are even disciples, I don't know. All right? He argued that some forms of evil were so bad and undefeatable except through military force that could justify killing. But then again, he justified killing of Christians who were, you know, heretics, because that way they'll go to heaven anyways, you know. So don't listen to Augustine. But Augustine also defended the right of self-defense. In other words, killing another to save your own life. And he also defended the idea of killing to defend the innocent. All right? Especially if governing authorities authorized it. Okay? All right. A defense of the just war concept. By the way, I don't believe in the just war concept. I don't believe it in it at all. I believe possibly Christians can justify being in the military, but I'm saying there's no such thing as a just war. I don't believe that concept can be defended. All right? But I'm going to defend it anyway, okay, because it's my job. I'm trying to present both sides of the argument. So God commanded that Israel engage in warfare. That is a fact, correct?
Yeah.
So therefore, warfare is almost by definition not necessarily sinful. Mm. Okay? Warfare is not murder. Warfare is not murder. Murder is taking the life of another person for some sort of personal advantage of some sort. Out of anger, out of greed, out of murder is taking the life of somebody for your, you know, something for yourself. Okay, so war is not murder. I know that because the Bible said, do not kill. And God ordered Israel to take life in war. Okay? That does not mean that Christians should be joining the military, but this is something that should be noted. Now remember, Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. And the context of Jesus, of God essentially commanding his people to take part in war was a theocracy. A theocracy by definition is a government where, at least in theory, God is ruling over that government, which gives that government the right to do something that they could not otherwise have done. Yes?
Can you define a just war?
Let Augustine do it. So Augustine would say things like to defend yourself or to oppose something that is clearly an evil and there's no other way to do it. Of course, he used that to take out other Christians in Northern Africa. I mean, so, but basically, a warfare that involves defending the right against something that's evil. All right, which I don't know if that is even a thing. For example, I think he might... If he were alive in the year 1941 or 1940, he might have argued that for the British to make war on Nazi Germany would be a just war. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, but Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. And he said, the kingdom of God is within or among you. And therefore, the example of God commanding his people in the Old Testament to make war on their enemies is evidence that killing in war is not murder, necessarily. However, it's not evidence that a Christian can be involved in voluntarily taking part in military service. All right, point number two. In a fallen world, it is impossible for a stable government to exist without military defense. All right, that would be even more true back in Jesus' time. I mean, there are a couple countries that actually don't have defense because somebody else is defending them. Like, I don't think Andorra has an army. You know, I don't think Liechtenstein has an army, okay? So you could argue that I'm slightly exaggerating. The bottom line is, although Christians, maybe they should not take part in military service. Maybe, but the fact is, even if they cannot, they live in a country that does have military. And in fact, if they didn't have military, they probably couldn't even have their church. Mm. All right. So that's something to be said in favor of the idea of Christians possibly taking part in the military. Would you all agree with point number two there? In a fallen world, you can't go without a military. We agree with that. Okay, great. Therefore, wars will happen. And Christians cannot stop war.
Yeah.
Period. Point number three, this is even a stronger point, I would argue. which is Romans 13, 1 through 7. By the way, I'm arguing against myself right now, just so you know. But I feel like obligated to make this argument. Okay? Romans 13, 1 through 7. We read this not so long ago. We did a class on Romans a couple of semesters ago. Okay, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities. So what are the governing authorities? For us, that would be the Senate, yeah, the House of Representatives, the Supreme Court, the governor, the president, the judiciary, the police. That's what he's talking about. Let everyone be subject to governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. That might be hard to listen to if you hear about the Nazi Germany or Pol Pot regime. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right. Well, that's not always true, but as a general rule. But for those who do wrong, do you want to be free from fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right and you will be commended. Again, we understand that Paul is not saying this is true in every case. He's giving a general truth, a general truth. All right? For the one in authority is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for rulers do not bear the sword for no reason. Okay, that, I believe, is a statement that Paul would not back off on. He said, for rulers do not bear the sword for no reason. He doesn't say the rulers have a good reason for bearing the sword. He's making it a bit softer. They don't do it for no reason, even though it's a double negative, right? They are God's servants, agents of wrath, to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. The implication is that the governing authority has the right to use force to defend itself. That's a clear statement from Paul, which seems to be relevant to the questions that we're asking this evening. Okay? So now I'm going to start working towards conclusions. All right, think about the things that I said, which seem to point very, very strongly against the idea that a Christian ought to voluntarily say, yeah, I'm going to sign up for the military. Yeah. I've said some things that seem to clearly point in the opposite direction from that. But I've also made some points that imply maybe not this, not a great idea, but that it's a possibility. Mm-hmm. Okay, got it? So ought a Christian believer voluntarily join the military? This is assuming we live in a country where it's not mandatory. Got it? We don't have the draft. That may be put in a position to take the life of a morally innocent person or to support others who do. Say, well, I'll join the military, but I'm going to be in the supply train, so I'm not going to actually hold a gun. No, the person bringing the supply to the front line is equally responsible for the person who's firing the guns. So if you're going to join the military in supporting, you know what I'm saying, so ought a Christian believer to do that? Okay, I'm going to come up with a tentative answer, which is going to be my opinion. Ought a disciple of Jesus to join the military in a country in which it is legally mandatory to serve in the military? The alternative being to live in rebellion, ultimately, against that governing authority. That seems like possibly a different answer, I would imagine. Let's say you lived in Russia where it's mandatory to serve in the military and you could end up involved invading a country with no justification. But there's also mandatory military service in Ukraine.
Wow.
All right. What are the disciples who live in Ukraine doing today in our church? What are they doing? Are they joining the military? You might want to ask that question. What if you lived in Israel or Singapore or any of many countries that have compulsory service? What about conscious objection? Might conscientious objector status be a possibility? And should a Christian choose that status? Let me tell you a story. When I was in graduate school, I was 23 years old, and the elders in our church there in Boulder brought in the people between 18 and 25, the guys, and said, by the way, just, you know, if you want to do conscientious objector, we will write a letter for you. We will support you in that. Okay, I don't know if you knew this, but in the Churches of Christ, dozens, probably hundreds of Church of Christ preachers went to prison during World War I because they told their congregants not to join the military. So the Stone Campbell movement across the board in the 19th century was strongly pacifist and strongly advocating, with some exceptions, by the way, strongly advocating a conscientious objector. All right, and many Church of Christ preachers went to prison for that. Wow. During World War I. All that changed between World War I and World War II. The Churches of Christ became staunchly anti-communist and right-wing and Republican supporting and saying, yay, rah, World War II.
What?
I'm just telling you what happened. All right? Of course, everybody knows the movie Hacksaw Ridge, right?
Great movie.
Yeah.
No,
yeah, and so... this guy, what's his name?
Andrew Garfield?
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Isn't it Daniel something? Yeah, Desmond Doss.
Desmond Doss.
He claimed conscientious objector. And he refused to fight in the war.
Yeah.
But he had compulsory military service. But he lives in a country where conscientious objector is a real thing. I believe that actually
the Geneva Convention?
Yeah, the Geneva Convention, I believe, requires countries to offer that option.
Oh,
okay.
I didn't know
that. All right. What about lethal self-defense? What about defending your family? What about having a gun in your home, the purpose of which is potentially to kill somebody who would invade your home? Okay? And, of course, there's two versions of that. There's defending yourself. You're going to go after me, I'm going to shoot you. All right? Or defending your family. Those seem to be two morally different questions. Okay, I think that's something we could think about. All right. What about the right of self-defense, or more easily justifiable, I would say, in light of Jesus' statements about, you know, turning the other cheek and that kind of thing? Ought a Christian to buy a gun, potentially, to take somebody out? Having a gun for hunting, I don't think anybody has a problem with that. I've never heard of it. Or having a gun because you like doing target practice. But having a gun for the specific purpose of, if somebody comes in, I'm going to take them out. All right. So is that okay? We'll talk about that. What about a Christian being in the police force, where potentially their job might require them to kill somebody? Also, it's a possibility. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through that list, and I'm going to make comments, and then we'll discuss it, okay? I'm going to go through this list, voluntarily serving in the military, and others saying, I could be a chemist, I could be a plumber, I could be a restaurant waitress, or I could be in the military where I'm being trained to kill people. All right, I can choose, so is it okay for me to choose that one, okay? Got it? Number two, what about serving in the military in order to not rebel against the law in your country? Number three, what about defending yourself, deadly force, or defending an innocent person with deadly force, and what about the police? Okay. Now, category number one, I would say Jesus was without qualification a pacifist who would not use nor even condone the use of violence either for military purposes or for self-defense, and probably, I would argue, not even to defend another person. But maybe I'm wrong. Okay? I don't believe that Jesus would have said to somebody, yeah, sure, please join the military. That's a great idea. Okay? Oh, and I don't think he would say, if somebody's going to kill you, you kill them first. I really don't think that Jesus would say that. All right. Also in category number one, warfare for a Christian objective to spread the faith or to defend the faith is ruled out. Those are things I can say with great confidence, although that very last phrase, I think, is in doubt. That very last phrase. Jesus didn't speak to that. He did speak to defending yourself, but he didn't speak to defending another. Okay? Category number two. Here is, this is just me telling you what I think. Got it? Hey, Josh Sr., this is just me telling you what I think. Okay? Because I presented both sides on this one. I believe that given Scripture and given the history of Christianity, I reasonably infer that a Christian ought not to voluntarily choose the military as their career. Because the likelihood of finding oneself in a morally objectionable position is too high. I had a good friend who was in the Air Force. He was a member of the church we were part of in Spokane. And he told a true story where he was serving in the United States, in an Air Force base in the United States. They took off and something like 12 hours later, they're dropping bombs, and he didn't even know the country on which they were dropping bombs.
Wow.
Didn't tell him.
Nope.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, should a Christian choose that form of career? And I would say, no. That's my personal conclusion. And anybody who asked my opinion, I would say that. I wouldn't apologize for it. I wouldn't judge. I'm going to tell you're going to hell for doing that. I'm not even going to say you're sinning. I'm saying don't do it. Do not do it. There's no... What's the possible gain? Well, they'll train me and they'll pay me. Yeah, right. But I'm telling you, my friend was morally outraged, and he should have been. By the way, I believe countries have a right to defend themselves. All right?
Sovereign countries?
Yes. So I'm not saying it was wrong that America did that. I'm saying that brother should not have put himself in that position. Should not have. All right? That's assuming he was a Christian when he decided to sign up. All right? There are people who have been in the military for 16 years. They have 4 years to go. They become a Christian. I think I'd try to do a conscientious objector, which is a real thing, by the way. But they might kick you out if you do that. So my conclusion is no. The moral objectability of being in a military when you could do anything else, I don't think you can justify it. However, given Romans 13, 1 through 7, I believe for those who are already in the military service, who have signed up for military service, and who live in a, or those who live in a legally mandated military service country, this is a gray area, which I believe ought to be left as a matter of conscience. All right. So if I've had, by the way, we lived in San Diego. Our Bible talk was almost half of them were Navy people. And I did not tell them, you need to quit the Navy right now. In fact, I didn't even imply that. All right. And, you know, when it's Veterans Day, I say thank you for your service because I really heartfelt thank them for their service. Mm-hmm. Got it? So let's go back. Category number one. Okay. Category number one. Category number two, but that is my reasonable inference. And I hold to that without any conscience about it or hesitation. But I've had many friends who didn't agree with me on that. And they're Christians. Got it? Category number three, where personally, I wouldn't. Yeah, exactly. Right. Again, I personally, if it was World War II, I would have gone for conscientious objector, Josh. That's what I would have done. Conscientious objector. But that's my conviction, Josh, and understand, I'm just telling you. But I made this clear, right? I made this clear. When I got to this one, I said, this is my personal conviction. Yeah. I believe...
The gassing of all the Jews and all that, you know, just...
I understand that. Believe me, I understand that. All right? I'm just telling you my personal conviction, all right, which is that I would not voluntarily in a... that situation. If I had to, if there was mandatory service, if there certainly was in World War II, then I'd probably go conscientious objector. That's what I would do. However, I would not judge somebody who didn't go that way. Got it? Not judging. Okay? And I understand that people are not going to agree with me. I made that very clear. And I also defended that view, right? I gave several scriptures and several examples to defend the view that's not the one I hold, right?
Yep.
Okay, so please try your very best not to be mad at me. Try your very best. No. I understand that. And you should do that, Josh. And if your conviction goes against what I'm saying, you hold on to that conviction, and I will not try to argue out of it. Okay? But, again, I'm putting this in category two. That's what I'm doing. Okay? Alright, yes, okay, let's keep going. Category number three. Personally, if I was in a country that had mandatory military service, I believe I would serve. I'm not in that situation, but I believe I would serve. If the option of conscientious objector existed, I would probably go for that. But either way, I'm not gonna judge, to me, that's a matter of conscience. It's just a matter of conscience. And I feel free to have your conviction about that, but I would keep it to myself probably. That's what I would do. And as for using deadly force in self-defense, I believe that also is a gray area. Okay? I have my conviction about that, but I believe that's something for people, individuals' conscience to decide. Okay? I personally would not have a gun in my house, but for somebody to defend their family against somebody trying to murder them, I would back them up 100%. Okay? Got it? I'm not saying I wouldn't do it, but if somebody did do it, I would back them up in court. You know what I'm saying? But it's a gray area. It's a matter of conscience.
Yeah.
And I believe that there are Christians who would say, no, I would not. I would not hold deadly force as a potential, even to defend the life of my family. Okay? I'm just saying. So these are areas that I believe Christians will disagree on, and we just need to let them disagree on this. I've had some of my best friends get in my face and tell me that I'm bogus for saying that. And I say, amen, you do that. You please do that. Love you. Got it? All right, Josh? By the way, Josh owns the gun. And we've had this discussion.
Oh, nice.
Amen, Josh. I'm not trying to say anything about that. I hope that you got that, right? Yeah, you got that. Good. All right. Number six. On the other hand, for the police, it is true that a job as a police officer is, at least in theory, putting you in a position where you may have to use deadly force. Again, just my opinion. Just my opinion, okay? But the basic job of a police officer is to protect and defend and serve, not to kill. So their basic job description is to kill only in the last possible, whatever. And therefore, the basic job of a police officer is to protect people from violence, not to commit violence. Therefore, I say that's a very honorable Christian occupation. All right. I'm not sure I'd become a police officer, but I believe the police, whose basic job is to keep peace, to prevent violence, to prevent destruction, I'd say, even though in theory you could have to kill somebody, if you're not willing to do that, don't become a police officer.
Yeah.
But going back to Romans 13, I say even as a Christian. Even as a Christian. Right, that's just my opinion. However, you should be aware there are countries where it's impossible to be a police officer without having corruption. There are countries where a Christian cannot serve in the police. They cannot. A Nigerian cannot be a police officer. Somebody in the Congo, you cannot be a police officer. But that's not our situation, so there you go. All right, so let's have our discussion. All right?
Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
What do you think about Luke 3 when John the Baptist gives that soldier advice?
What did he say?